It's about you.
6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Well, the Bush campaign declared today that the presidential election is over. Bush spokeswoman Karen Hughes said today in Austin, Texas, that the unofficial recount of Florida ballots confirms that George W. Bush carried the state of Florida on Tuesday and thus is entitled to Florida's 25 electoral votes, enough electoral votes to make him the next president of the United States. Not surprisingly, the Gore campaign is not conceding. It is calling for a more careful recount of the votes cast in three key Florida counties to make sure the recount figures are accurate. Gore campaign says it's also supporting legal challenges to the original vote in Palm Beach, Florida, Palm Beach County, Florida, on the grounds that thousands of Floridians were essentially deprived of their right to vote for the candidate of their choice. They argue, when all is said and done, that Mr. Gore carried Florida and thus has been elected president. We're going to take a look at the implications of the legal process and what may inevitably stand at the end of the legal process, namely the fact that one of these two men, Al Gore or George W. Bush, is going to have to concede, even though he may firmly believe in his heart that he's actually won the presidency. We'd like your comments on that, and we'll get to that discussion in just a few minutes. But former Secretary of State James Baker is meeting with reporters down in Florida right now. Mr. Baker has been sent to Florida by the Bush campaign to officially oversee the recount, and let's hear what he has to say.
The vote here in Florida was very close, but when it was counted, Governor Bush was the winner. Now, 3 days later, the vote in Florida has been recounted. Over two-thirds of the state election supervisors overseeing that recount are Democrats. At the end of this recount, Governor Bush is still the winner, subject only to counting the overseas ballots, which traditionally have favored the Republican candidates. No evidence of vote fraud, either in the original vote or in the recount, has been presented. Now, the Gore campaign is calling for yet another recount. In selective and predominantly Democratic counties, where there were large, unexplained vote swings in their favor in the recount, it appears that the Gore campaign is attempting to unduly prolong the country's national presidential election through endless challenges to the results of the vote here in Florida. Furthermore, the more often ballots are recounted, especially by hand, the more likely it is that human errors, like lost ballots and other risks, will be introduced. This frustrates the very reason why we have moved from hand counting to machine counting. Let me say a word specifically about the Palm Beach ballot. There's a rule of law to be followed in all elections. The state of Florida has established legal procedures to design, approve, publish, and if need be, to protest ballots before the election. The ballot was designed by a Democratic elections supervisor. She approved it. The Democratic Party did not question it.
The former Secretary of State James Baker is speaking for the Bush campaign.
We're having some difficulty staying with that feed out of Tallahassee. We're having some satellite problems from the source.
Well, you've got the essence of what Mr. Baker had to say. That is, again, reiterating the Bush campaign position that this race is essentially over and suggesting that the Gore campaign should drop any further legal challenges. The Gore campaign says it will not drop those challenges, that it wants what it considers to be an accurate recount in Florida and wants to make sure that all of the people in Florida indeed have their votes counted. the legal process apparently will roll on. And sorting out these legal questions, just in Florida alone, could take weeks or more. Say nothing of looming challenges perhaps in other states. Yesterday, former President Jimmy Carter urged patience. He said that the process should be allowed to work itself out. Former Senator, former White House Chief of Staff, and former presidential candidate Howard Baker, for his part, said yesterday that the legal process will never be able to absolutely resolve this dispute. He argues at some point, sooner or later, one of the candidates will have to blink. One of them, despite firmly believing that they won the election, will have to step aside. And that candidate will have to try to convince the 49 million people who voted for him that they, too, should let it go and let the other guy win. Well, this hour of midday, we would like to hear from you on that part of the story. What will it take, no matter who you voted for on Tuesday, what will it take for you to accept the fact that the other guy could be declared president, even though you firmly believe your candidate won? And when should one of the candidates step aside? Right now, a week from today, a year from now? We do invite you to give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Joining us now are two of Minnesota's most distinguished former elected officials to share their thoughts on this question, former Minnesota Governors Wendell Anderson and Al Cui. Governor Cui served at the federal level in the U.S. House, Governor Anderson in the U.S. Senate. Governors Cui, Anderson, thanks for joining us today.
Delighted to be here.
Yeah, glad to be here, Gary.
Now, at some point, it does seem that one of these candidates, Mr. Bush or Mr. Gore, is going to have to make a very, very difficult decision. I would think it would be difficult to step aside when you actually believe you won, but somebody will have to blink. Governor Cui?
I suppose you could call it blinking, but I think it is more than that. It's looking at what's best for the country, because we're going to come to that date, and they say it's the November 17th when all the ballots are in from overseas, and then the state will have done its best job possible and will have declared a winner. They declared a winner now, but it is contingent on the overseas ballots coming in. I think that's the time when whoever is behind ought to concede the election, because the rat's nest that we'll get into if you keep challenging and challenging the election, because you can always find something someplace. And I can use an example in my first election to Congress on that. But I won't do it. Let Wendy say a word.
Governor Anderson?
Well, first let me say, I remember back in 1960, that Richard Nixon, I think, thought for some pretty good reasons that he had beaten John Kennedy and conceded. And I think history has suggested that he had, you know, some reason for not moving forward in that way. I think that the critical date is November 17. It may very well be that these absentee ballots from overseas heavily favor Republican candidate, but you know, I'd kind of like to see those ballots opened up. I think it's unlikely that a judge in Florida is going to undo what appears to be the result of the election. And when they talk about some 29,000 ballots being disqualified or declared improper, and I don't have any feel for that. Let the judge look at that, but I think they have to act very, very quickly. I wouldn't like this matter to extend beyond November 17th. I think you have to bring it to a head. I think Governor Cui is right. You can always find some problems. Obviously, the Gore people in the last couple of days have picked up significant votes. I mean, it's been I think they picked up about 2,000 votes. That's significant. But again, I don't want to prolong it. I think Governor Cui, you're right that when those votes come in, I think unless there's something we don't know, that should end it.
Yeah, I just use an example. I ran for the House once, House of Representatives, because a person died 2 weeks before the election. I ran as a write-in. It was very close, and they threw some of the ballots out because they spelt my name wrong. You know how it is with Norwegians.
You mean Norwegians can't spell?
And the thought of challenging that, I just figured it would be too disruptive. And I'm glad I did not try to do it. And then when I went to Congress, Gene Foley was the person I beat in the special election, and he did challenge it. They did a spot check and did the checking like they've already done in Florida, and that one, I would have won by a much bigger margin if they had had a full recount. And so what I find in this, that there are inaccuracies in elections. They've tried to improve it every year so that it would be as accurate as possible. But when human beings are working, you can always find something went wrong someplace. And so you have to end up depending on what the best judgment of the people who are giving the authority to certify who won.
Gentlemen, all very rational. But how do you, if you're the candidate, once you've made that decision, the tough decision, well, I'm going to be the one to concede here, how do you take with you the 49 million people who supported you and who still firmly believe, many of them anyway, that you're the president?
The same way Nixon did, because there are many people who firmly believe that he won that. But that's just the way. I mean, the country is even more important than your supporters.
But don't you have to convince the supporters of the rightness of what you're doing so that they can rally behind the other guy?
You know, I think
if you're a statesman, you can.
You know, once the new president is inaugurated and picks a new cabinet and so forth, very quickly, I think the voters, Republican and Democrat, move on to these new issues. And I think that I think the next president, regardless of this temporary problem, is going to have the support of the people. I don't think this creates some divisiveness that can't mend.
Howard Baker said yesterday in his mind, one of these gentlemen will end up as president and the other will be the national hero. You agree?
I do. I have a lot of respect for Howard Baker, and I don't disagree.
Governor Quay?
Yeah, I don't know if to be a hero, but I think the way it has to be is when the election has been certified in Florida, whoever is declared the winner should be the winner. And one who's declared not the winner should be man enough to say so.
And set aside any further legal challenges.
Set aside all the legal challenges. Yep.
The only thing I would say, Al, you were here then. I've just read about this in the history books, but Elmer Anderson had a race with his lieutenant governor, Karl Rovog, and, of course, there's a recount. It lasted 6-7 months, and Rovog won by 91 votes, and I recall he didn't take office till about April. I'm not suggesting this is a pattern we should follow at the presidential level, but we survived that.
Yeah, we did survive it here in the state, but think of what it would be if we followed that route and did that kind of a recount throughout the whole nation. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have it in April that the new president would take office. It'd be later than that. I don't think. Then, with all the challenges that can be done in the legal system now, I think it'd be horrendous. It'd be terrible.
Although I think President Clinton has indicated he's willing to stay on.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Bye bye.
Okay, bye.
Former Minnesota governors Wendell Anderson and Al Quay joining us during this hour of our midday program. And again, we'd like your thoughts on these issues. Now, there's plenty of things to talk about in terms of this presidential recount story, no question about it. What to do about spoiled ballots and the rest. But what we're interested in today is that what happens at the end of the process? At some point, one of these two candidates and all of his supporters will have to somehow accept the fact that somebody's going to have to blink here. Somebody will have to accept the results at some point. And whether you could accept the fact that perhaps the man who is president really didn't win at all, whether that would be okay with you. And when should the candidates make that decision? I'd like to have you give us a call here and join our conversation. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free. That number would be 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. I suppose, in part, the question has to do with legalities versus legitimacy, if you want to phrase it that way. Carol, what are your thoughts on this issue?
I guess I have to agree with both of the men that were speaking. Inflaming this just doesn't seem to be the way to go for the country. maybe we, because of the way it's going, maybe we should just wait until the November 17th, which if I'm understanding it correctly, you wait until November 17th, and that is the last day, final day that you can accept any votes from any state. Get all the absentee ballots in from wherever, make the decision, and move on. I mean, who's ever on top in whatever state, count the electoral votes, those are the rules, and go on.
Do you think...
Maybe some other states will be overturned by the absentee ballots, maybe not. Maybe Bush will win in Florida, maybe he won't. Whoever's the winner is the winner.
Do you think people will be willing to accept that, whoever supported the other guy?
I'm sure people will be disappointed. So half the country is disappointed or the other half is disappointed. But we seem to get through it in 1960. It's certainly a fair process. It's not a new process. It's what it is. It's apparently what has made America great. Just do it. Get on with it.
All right. Thanks, Carol.
Okay.
Appreciate your comments. Let's move on to Don, who joins us from New Brighton. Don, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi, Gary. My name is Don. How are you today?
I'm just fine.
Good. I talked to you once before. I think that it's important to let the process play out fully. It would be nice to have closure by November 17th, but the very fact that such a large proportion of voters have had their ballots thrown out, I think leads us to think that it would be a rush to judgment if we closed it on November 17th before we could find out what to do about those. I think that the courts will have to decide.
Right. But at some point, Don, once it seems like, at least some of the experts say, once you head down the path of legal challenges, so on and so forth, eventually the courts will never actually be able to resolve this issue. So then the question becomes, at some point, one of these candidates is going to have to give up, essentially. Do you think the country would be ready for that?
Well, I think they would if one gave up, but I don't think that you should give up until you figure out what to disenfranchise voters.
So fight on.
200 votes.
Okay, Don, I'm sorry your phone is breaking up, so we'll have to move on to another caller, but we appreciate it. Let's go on to John, who joins us from Roseville. Hi, John.
Yes, given that they have until the 17th, the criteria should be to take those ballots and extrapolate based on the other party voting of the other minor offices what the actual intent of those voters was. That can easily be done by a committee of people working in that county.
But John, don't you agree that no matter what kind of solution or what kind of procedure is followed, both candidates and their supporters are going to feel like they got robbed?
Yes. I think that what you'll wind up with is you'll wind up with a heroic person who concedes, and then you'll wind up with a President Pyrrhus. That is, if you remember the story of King Pyrrhus of Greece and the Pyrrhic victory, he basically said, another victory such as this and I shall be ruined. That next president is basically going to be, he's going to be governing a gridlock USA.
Do you think the supporters, let's say that Al Gore is the one who concedes, do you think the Gore supporters will willingly accept the fact that George W. Bush is then the president?
No, they won't, but that will just be part of the national contention that is part of democracy.
Okay. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Let's move on to Ann, who's on the line from La Crosse. Ann, at some point, one of these candidates will have to make a very, very difficult decision. Do you think people will accept that decision, the ones especially who supported that candidate?
I would probably liken this to a football game. You're going to have to accept it. But if the people down there in that local county do not want to accept responsibility for their voting, in other words, if they're going to hee-haw him and make excuses for their ballot, not taking responsibility, knowing what their county has. What I'm hearing the other people here say is that they want an overseer, and what they're doing there is they're giving up their local control to federal. eventually we'll have marshals with guns there is what they are trying to build this up to, that in effect people are not capable of making their own decisions because...
Well, Ann, we're a little off subject here. I appreciate your comments, but I'm wondering if at the end of the day, at the end of the process here, one of these candidates, no matter be it tomorrow or next week or next year, one of these candidates is going to have to make a decision and say, well, I really believe I won this election, but one of us has to give up, and so I'm going to make that decision. Do you think his supporters, whoever that candidate might be, will his supporters accept that?
I hope they do, again, to keep it local control. This is a state issue, and particularly in that county. I'm a state's rightist individual. I believe in the state's rights. I feel really bad that if you would need to pursue this, it's the real issue here would be, are you going to relinquish your state's right to have us, the Supreme Court, a federal entity, come in there to oversee a local issue?
So you think that's the key as to whether people would accept this decision, as to where the legal process played out?
It's going to be their decision as to who they want to judge their particular area. Do they want to keep this local, or do they defer and then surrender some of their control?
All right,
you want to surrender the laws and the vote that you have to a higher entity to make these decisions for you.
Okay, thank you, Ann. Appreciate it. Let's move on to Dan, who joins us. Dan, do you think people would support whatever decision the candidates make here? One of 49 million people presumably will be pretty upset.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm really for, you know, they called for a recount. They're doing the recount. If the recount, you know, comes out for either or candidate, I guess that's the way it is. But I do believe they should wait till the 17th for those overseas voters. If Florida law says, you know, the 17th is the date, well, then that's it. I mean, after the 17th, that's got to be it. I'm a Republican, so, I mean, I'll have a little bit of a bias. And I guess if George wins only by a few votes, I guess I really won't feel great about the win. But, you know, I guess I've had to put up with Clinton, I guess, the last 8 years. So in some regards, you know, maybe it is time to switch it up. You know, I don't think I think he's only going to have it for 4 years, you know.
Well, can you, as a Bush supporter, could you accept the fact if the process starts playing out, the Gore campaign pursues various legal challenges and one thing leads to another, and we find ourselves a few weeks from now, still no resolution in sight. Could you, as a Bush supporter, go along with Governor Bush if he stood up and said, well, enough is enough for the good of the country. I am conceding the election. I believe I won, but I'm stepping aside. Could you accept that?
Yes. Yeah, I think I would. I support George Bush, and, you know, I supported his father, too, and I would, I'd still respect the guy. I think he ran a good campaign, a good clean campaign. I thought both candidates ran pretty good campaigns, brought up pretty good issues. I'd support him. You know, it's for the good of the country. Yeah, I'd rather, you know, either candidate is going to have a tough time with, the Congress, the way Congress has been played out. So it isn't really going to matter in a sense to me at this point with the way Congress is set up kind of evenly split. So.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
Let's move on to Barra, who is on the line from St. Paul. Your comment, please.
Hi. I have two comments, one political, one legalistic. I supported Nader, and our goal was to try and get Nader 5% of the vote so he'd qualify for $12 million to be able to raise issues that were not raised by the Democrats and Republicans in this election. And with $12 million, he'd be able to get some airtime in 4 years. It's clear that the push by Gore supporters, especially scaring people about the Supreme Court appointments and so on, got at least 2% of the voters to switch from Nader to Gore, and that gave Gore his popular vote majority and put him into contention. Then we get to the legalistic issues. I understand that Florida law requires that the major parties be listed above the minor parties, which was not true in the Palm Beach County ballot, where Buchanan's punch holes came in between Gore's and Bush's. that would seem to be some justification for a revote. 19,000 disputed ballots, if even half of those...
Well, setting aside all of these arguments, at some point, one of these two men will become the president. The other, by virtue of the fact, the other one has conceded.
There can only be one president.
Right.
Yes.
So one of them will have to concede. Do you suspect that the people who voted for the one who concedes will be able to go along with that and rally behind the new president?
I think that if Gore does not follow all legal struggles to support the fact that he won the popular vote, and if he indeed won the vote in Florida, but because of an illegal ballot or an unlawful ballot in Palm Beach County, he is losing the vote there. There's far less than 19,000 votes in play for the difference now, and I think if Gore does not pursue that and give the popular will a chance to be expressed, then the Nader voters will indeed have wasted their votes by voting for Gore, and I think that would be very unfortunate. I don't understand what the rush is. We've had months of politics and electioneering and ads, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden people are panicked because we might have to wait for a few weeks. I think it's important that we have a lawful process and that people follow the rules, and then we have to live with the rules.
And at some point down the road...
At some point when the rules are determined that one person wins, then the other people have to accept their loss as we do every time. But
what if we get to a point, though, where it's not clear? Let's say that it's decided that the recount goes in George Bush's favor. The Gore campaign pursues the legal issues in Florida and... on the premise that everybody, people have been disenfranchised, they should be allowed to vote. That moves forward, and perhaps he wins a favorable decision. That, in turn, leads to further lawsuits in other states where people say they were disenfranchised because of voting irregularities. On and on it goes for a while. At some point, one of the candidates will have to give up, won't they?
Well, if it's going into a legal battle, eventually the courts will decide. I don't think the presidency should be a game of chicken.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate the comment. We are polling those of you who listen to this program this hour on what does happen once the recount is over, once the legal processes, if there are going to be any official legal challenges, once they have worked their way for a while. At some point, one of the candidates will have to decide. It seems like both candidates are convinced they've actually won the election. Somebody will have to concede. And the question before the House is whether the 49 million people who actually supported that candidate will accept the decision and move on. Side issue, of course, is when the candidate should make that decision. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your comments here in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on NPR is supported by Northwest Airlines, offering service to more than 750 cities worldwide with Northwest Airlines and their global travel partners.
But
I'm Lorna Benson. Ralph Nader is taking a lot of criticism for pulling votes away from Al Gore in Tuesday's election. On the next All Things Considered, Nader's running mate, Winona LaDuc, weighs in on the current uncertainty over who will be the next president of the United States and talks about what's next for the Green Party. It's All Things Considered weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
Coming up over the noon hour today here on Midday, Senator-elect Mark Dayton will be here to take your questions. Financial support for our programming comes in part from the new and renewing members of Minnesota Public Radio. News headlines now. Here's Stephen John. Stephen.
Thank you, Gary. George W. Bush's campaign accused Al Gore today of mounting endless challenges to a disputed vote count in Florida and said the vice president should concede the race for the White House if he loses the state. At a news conference in Florida, former Secretary of State James A. Baker said there needs to be finality in the race.
Let the country step back for a minute and pause and think about what's at stake here. This may be the last chance to do that. There is no reasonable end to this process if it slips away.
Baker said Republicans had twice in the last 40 years decided against prolonged challenges in closely contested elections. Gore's top campaign aide countered, "This election is not over." Human rights groups are pushing President Clinton to press for greater freedoms during his historic trip to Vietnam next week. They say the communist nation continues to curb basic freedoms. This will be the first visit to a unified Vietnam by an American president. The startup of service on the Alliance Natural Gas Pipeline across Minnesota has been delayed again. Pipeline officials had initially hoped to go online by the end of October. Now officials anticipate they should be able to begin commercial delivery of natural gas by the end of November. The 2,000-mile pipeline runs from British Columbia, Canada, to Chicago and crosses Minnesota from Wheaton in the west to Albert Lea in the south. The forecast for the state is for mostly cloudy skies today. A chance of light snow or flurries in the north, highs in the upper 20s to upper 30s. Maybe some light snow overnight tonight in the northwest, and a chance of light snow tomorrow moving in from the west. Highs will be in the 30s pretty much for the weekend. Right now, 25 in Mankato. Bemidji has 28 degrees. It's 31 in the Twin Cities. That's a news update from Minnesota Public Radio.
Thank you, Stephen. It's 23 minutes before noon, midday, coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. And this hour, we're trying to look ahead, look past some of the immediate questions on the issue of the presidential recount, the issues of the spoiled ballots, and the fact that the recount is underway, the overseas ballots, all of that. Look a little bit past some of the questions, the controversy surrounding the recount itself, and try to figure out what happens at some point down the road here. One of these candidates, even though he probably firmly believes he actually won the election, one of these candidates will have to step aside, concede the election to the other. And we're interested in whether or not you could live with that, whether or not the nation would be willing to go along with that. 49 million people supported each of these gentlemen. And many of those supporters, we suspect, firmly believe that their man actually won, and if he doesn't become president, has been robbed of the presidency. Side issue, of course, is when the candidate should make that decision. If you'd like to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And, Stu, you're up next.
You bet.
What do you think?
First of all, great show. But secondly, I'm struck with the notion that here we are electing the leaders of the free world, the leaders of our country. And the real question that comes to me is what leadership responsibilities do these two persons have? It seems to me that there's a potential for people, those two folks, to sit down and say, we agree to the following procedure and process and timeline to resolve this matter. And whoever comes out on top, that's the will of the people. By that I mean what's happening now, I think, is people are being held hostage by each little step along the way by a threat of legal procedures and processes. And of all opportunities to step forward as a leader, here's an opportunity for those folks to sit down and sort of say, look, let's resolve this matter. If we involve, get engaged with the following steps, you know, for example, the focus now is on Palm Beach. The reality is that then that raises the other issue. There are four or five other states, Oregon, Wisconsin, New Mexico, and I forget, one or two others. If the parties were able to agree to, here's a procedure we think will end up with a fair assessment of those votes that need to be accounted for, and we will live with the results and the timeline of the following, I think that is kind of interesting proposal.
Do you think there's any chance that that will happen?
Well, I think what's happening now is we're waiting one party or waiting the other party out relative to the public policy, that is, the sense of outrage of the country, let's move on. So they're sort of waiting for the pressure of expediency, and it seems to me taking a more affirmative leadership role would be more responsible.
And you think that might help bring along the supporters of whoever ends up?
Absolutely,
losing?
On both sides. If one candidate says, I will agree with this procedure and process and live with the results, then he's speaking to the entire 49 million who voted for him, to resolve that matter and sort of saying, here's our leader taking a stand, this is what he wishes to happen, and this is what's going to happen.
Thanks a lot, Stu.
You bet.
Let's move on to Tina, who's on the line from St. Paul. Tina, what about that candidate who has to make the decision? When should they make that decision? Can they take their supporters with them and rally support behind the new president? What do you think?
I think probably when the votes are tallied on the 17th of November, the decision has been made But regardless of the outcome, you're still going to have half the nation that is going to be dissatisfied with the outcome. And I think during this whole process, and I'm not any sort of politician whatsoever, there's significant damage that's being done to this country. Each day it increases. I'm a little concerned with what I've been reading in the Star Tribune today, even what's going on as far as Jesse Jackson appearing in South Florida, raising, you know, specters of racial discrimination and voting. And I think there's a hotbed that's just going to explode if this isn't resolved quickly and peacefully.
Is there anything, Tina, do you think there's anything that the candidates, whoever it is that ultimately has to concede here, is there anything that anything they could say to their supporters which would help mend the wounds a little bit?
At this point, I'm not sure. I think tensions are so high, and it's being exacerbated daily in the media and on TV, that maybe if they say, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the outcome, but I'm going to support my candidate 100%, and I need you guys to support me in that decision, maybe that might help things as much. But we already heard that supposedly Al Gore said, well, you don't need to get snippy. Obviously, there's not any kind of friendship between Gore and Bush at this point, and I don't know if there ever can be.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tina. Appreciate the comments. Let's move on to next caller here. Cindy, thanks for calling in this morning, and your thoughts on this question?
Hi, Gary. I think that either candidate's ability to lead is compromised without letting the voters' will prevail. And if at this point that includes legal issues brought by the voters, they need to be resolved before anyone concedes. And in this regard, and in relation to earlier thoughts about our suggestions that Gore and Bush have, are adequately empowered to make a difference in this, I think it's out of their control. I think that their actions are moot, regardless of what the media or the campaign suggest. A couple things other than that. The Nixon analogy, I just want to say something about that. I think it's inaccurate and misleading. My understanding is that in the Nixon situation, there was a question of intent of the election process. And in the present case, I believe the question is of effect, how the effect of the election process. I think Florida law makes that distinction. And I'm also aware of a real irony, at least for me, in which campaigning as the candidate of integrity and using the slogan, I trust you, I'm just flabbergasted that the Bush camp would make statements before the Florida Secretary of State finalized the recount and the voters' legal concerns were addressed fully. So this idea about best for the country, the Bush campaign force-feeding the people in a premature way to finalize this situation, I think that is really harmful, and that the best way to mend wounds that have been made in the past week is just for the campaigns to be quiet.
Mm-hmm. How long would you think the candidates should allow the legal process to continue before one of them steps aside?
I don't think the campaign should have anything to say about the duration of the legal process.
Because apparently that they, and I'm not up on my election law, so forgive me here if I'm wrong about this. My sense is that in Florida it kind of is working its own will now, but in many of these other states where there are questions, it is up to the campaigns to bring a challenge if there's going to be a challenge or call for a recount.
I think if there's no legal recourse around recounts, if there's no legal pressure for recounts, the campaign should not interfere.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Let's move on here to another caller. And Wayne, your thoughts on this issue?
Yes. My thought is that the rules and the laws that were in effect on November 7th, if they're followed to the letter, then on November 17th we'll have, if not a major difference, we will have a clear-cut winner between the two. As far as the votes that were thrown out in Florida, those, when you voted and you punched two holes or you made a mistake, you had the right and the obligation, I believe, to go back and get another ballot. And if you didn't do that, your chance for recourse is gone.
Okay. Well, obviously there are a lot of people, most of them, I suppose, Gore supporters who would take your arguments further. But at some point, one of them will have to give up. And what would you suggest to the candidates that they say to their supporters, even though their supporters still firmly believe their guy got robbed?
Well, I am a Gore supporter, and the fact that if he wins the popular vote, that doesn't come into play in my book, because on November 7th, the Electoral College decided the winner.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I believe that when the overseas ballots come back, whoever wins, now just if they didn't go according to past deals and Gore won, then I would hope, and I'm not too sure. My sense here is that if Gore or Bush said, well, I think I'm going to concede here,
mm-hmm.
I got a feeling that the parties would be more into not letting them concede. I got a feeling that the voters aren't going to have a problem with, you know, they're going to be disappointed naturally. But I think the voters will accept the outcome of this better than the parties do.
Mm. Interesting. Thanks, Wayne.
You bet.
Appreciate it. Let's move on to a caller from Woodbury. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Your comments, please.
I think that the voters trusted an individual that they voted for. They said, look, we're going to give you the ultimate authority to control our military, to... press the big button, so to speak. They got to trust the judgment that candidate has. If he says that it's in the best interest to concede, I believe that the majority of voters are going to accept that.
They'll go along with it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. And let's see. Harry, you're next. What do you think about this?
Well, yeah, I guess tremendous disappointment and total lack of leadership on both Bush and Gore's part. I'm a Gore supporter, but I was grossly disappointed the election has continued. Neither of these has shown any vision or leadership of getting together, discussing it, deciding what should be done, and, you know, some sort of ground rules. You know, are they going to ask for a recount in Wisconsin, Iowa? You know, if Bush going to wait, he loses Florida, then ask for that. I think there's just, it's really terrible. I mean, we got two major candidates who... Truly, the campaign was not just a campaign. This is them. They don't like each other. There's no civility between them, and I think it's a disappointment myself.
So you'd like to see that summit meeting that our caller from La Crosse, Stu, was talking about earlier.
Yeah, I heard Stu. But what's the most disappointing is neither of them could do it on their own. I think the way Gore handled even the drunk driving issue with Bush, should have the decency to phone Bush and tell him, I had nothing to do with this, and I don't think it's a campaign issue. But Gore did his best to imply maybe you have to question Bush's integrity. But, you know, I don't know. There's times, Denny Hazard used to be my congressman, Speaker of the House. Maybe they use a thing in a log jam and let Denny Hazard try and be president. I don't know. But, I mean, it's just such a disappointment that whichever one leads... or attempts to lead now, in my mind, is tarnished. A real character issue.
Can the other candidate, whoever ends up losing here, take his supporters along with him? At some point, one of these candidates presumably will give a speech to the effect, well, we've been at this long enough for the good of the country. I'm going to concede, and I want all my supporters to do what's best for the country and rally around, so on and so forth. You think people will listen to him?
Well, I think so. I think it becomes more difficult day by day, and I think these legal challenges, since they're coming from Gore advisors, close advisors, it's kind of fanning the flames. And, I think this was a huge mistake on Gore's part. I think they should have stayed out of it and, let the course take itself, so it becomes more difficult now that the Gore camp itself is involved in the, you know, questioning and the legal procedures.
Okay.
No, I think eventually one of the two, and I think, you know, it may even take a joint statement from the two of them, which would be pretty hard to believe they could do that at this time. But, you know, I mean, the final analysis, even as a Gore supporter, when you look at Congress, I don't know it's going to make a whole lot of difference in the next couple of years who's president.
All right.
Neither had a mandate.
Thanks, Harry.
Yeah, bye.
Let's get at least one more caller on here before we wrap up. Brock, your comments, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, first off, I didn't vote for either of these yahoos. I voted for Harry Brown, so I don't care which one wins. But the important thing is that I think whoever concedes first, that's really the true leader here. And that's the person we as the American people probably should gather around and say, you know, this person is thinking about the country first, not about himself. You know, and that's the person that we should endorse as a people. For the president. You know, unfortunately, that obviously won't happen. But
Brock, what about the argument, the other side of that, which says that, and this rests on the assumption that they firmly believe they actually won, and you have 49 million people supporting you who have invested their fortunes in your fate. Is it true leadership just to turn your back on those people?
I don't think it is turning your back on the people. I think that you are, you know, saying, okay, you know, this legal contention and, you know, this divisive battle is not going to help the country. I'm going to help the country by letting the presidency, you know, go on. We can fight about these battles another day in terms of the issues, you know, but that, you know, not knowing who the president's going to be and, you know, tearing the country apart in, well, obviously not a civil war, but, you know, in the same contentiousness, you know, that's not what we need to do. We need to move forward, and, you know, we can fight about the issue battles on another day.
Thanks, Brock.
Thank you.
And last caller here is Paul. Your thoughts on this, Paul?
One quick thing about the Nixon situation. Just wanted to clarify, my understanding of that situation is that even if Illinois had been reversed, Kennedy still would have won. I think that's probably a lot of why Nixon didn't press it. But basically, what the thing that I haven't heard addressed in terms of when one of these guys, meaning Gore, should surrender, is how unusual is this mess up in Florida? The basic argument from the Republican side is, hey, look, mistakes happen everywhere. But usually, I think mistakes sort of cancel each other out on a local basis. My question is, how unusual is it to have 20,000 votes basically taken away from one side, which is apparently what happened down in that county? And if it is, in fact, very, very unusual, I think it's at least as arguable that Bush should be the one who should fall on his sword. Because my question to the Bush people is, how good is it going to feel to be president knowing that the judgment of history is going to be, this is a guy who was elected who really shouldn't have been, and that is going to be the judgment of history.
Okay.
And given all that, as a left-leaning person, I'm not going to support Bush. He tries to mess with the environment at all. I, you know, speaking to people on the left here, I would just simply say,
Paul, we got to run.
It's going to be a great organizing tool.
All right, we have to go. Thanks to all of you who called in or tried to call in this hour. No question, this conversation will continue unabated, and our coverage will continue as well. Reminder, coming up over the noon hour, Minnesota's new senator-elect, Mark Dayton. We'll also, of course, keep up to date on all the latest developments on the Florida recount story, so we'll keep you posted on that as well. Reminder, if you enjoy the programming you hear on Minnesota Public Radio, we do encourage you to become a member of Minnesota Public Radio. Next time you log on to MinnesotaPublicRadio.org, click on membership. And just a reminder, it's membership week on our classical music stations. Never, never too early to call.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 10th of November, 2000. It was on this day in 1969, Sesame Street made its first appearance on PBS. They thought of calling it the 2 and 2 or 5 show, the Little Kitty Show, the Nitty Gritty Little Kitty Show. Then they thought of the name 123 Sesame Street and then dropped the numbers. It was on this day in 1928, the first installment of Eric Maria Remarque's anti-war novel, All Quiet on the Western Front, was published in the German newspaper Vossische Zeitung.
In German, it was Im Westen nichts Neues. The author described the daily horrors faced by German soldiers in the trenches. A year after the Nazis came to power in 1933, they banned the book. It's the birthday of poet Carl Shapiro in Baltimore, 1913. Novelist J.P. Marquand, born in Wilmington, 1893. The playwright and poet Friedrich von Schiller, born in Marbach, Germany, 1759. Best known today as the author of the poem Ode to Joy, set to music by Beethoven in his choral symphony. It's the birthday of playwright Oliver Goldsmith in Kilkenny, County Westmeath, Ireland, 1730, author of She Stoops to Conquer and The Vicar of Wakefield. It's the birthday of the English painter and engraver William Hogarth, born in London, 1697, famous for his caricatures that appeared in the books A Rake's Progress, Marriage a la Mode, and A Harlot's Progress in the mid-18th century. And it's the birthday of Martin Luther, born in Eisleben, Saxony, 1483. He was 33 years old when, for the purpose of eliciting truth, he tacked his 95 theses or propositions onto the door of the castle church at Wittenberg on October the 31st, 1517. Many of his views were still tentative. He did not deny papal prerogative, but he found fault with papal policy, such as the sale of indulgences. He preached that a sinner was saved by God through faith alone, and not by works, and certainly not by donating money to the church. His protest might have gone unnoticed if not for the recent invention of the printing press, which made it possible for his writings to be circulated far and wide and become the spark that set off the Reformation and Protestantism. Here's a poem for today by Joyce Sutphen, Semi-Literate. Once I had no sense of the alphabet song, of its long train that wound along the top of the chalkboard in the schoolroom. I was anxious about little pairs of letters that seemed to hold hands and go off into the woods together, C and D, E and F, that's right, H and I, Hi, J and K. And then there was the caterpillar of LMNOP, what could that be? I was sure it meant something, something important, but I've never met one yet. QRS was curious, that was certain. TUV I liked because it reminded me of a little cabin by a lake where waves crashed on rocks all night. W, was that only one letter, one piece of the alphabet, or did it come apart to make another U and V? X, oh yes, that one made sense. But why didn't sound the way it looked, and when you asked why, that wasn't it. But Z was something I could love, a little striped horse gazing out the window, longing to go home. A poem by Joyce Sutphen, Semi-Literate, from her collection Coming Back to the Body, published by Holy Cow Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
News headlines are next.